hearing.
So I think this is just informational, correct, Joseph?
Yes.
Maybe that's the last meeting.
Is there any other actions?
No. I mean, they can file, I think, some other kind of civil suit, can they?
Brian, you made a motion to accept the minutes?
I make a motion to accept the minutes.
Second.
Second, Tony? Okay. All right.
And Brian accepted.
Peter's not here. Our leader's absent today.
He's second to have a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay, we approve the minutes. The old business is the case that we all have a copy of, the results of the Superior Court. That's just informational only, nothing to really talk about that we haven't talked about in the last year. As far as the content of the hearing. So, member renewal, Harry?
Yes, I said that I would
accept
another term.
Second?
I second.
Third.
Okay. Thank you, Harry, for serving.
You.
I guess we need to find another person to...
I'm sorry?
We need to find another person to have an alternate.
We've got, Brian will accept the position. I just have to get it affirmed by council's next meeting. So he's on deck to be approved.
Yeah, maybe we don't want Brian full-time.
He's...
Hey, man, my card's right there.
Yeah, but we got the keys.
We're welcome. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Brian will be moving up as a regular member, then we will need two alternates, because now we will not have any alternates. So if anybody knows anybody who might be interested, please let us know. And then we'll get Brian affirmed by the next council meeting, which is the third Tuesday.
Now, are they going to put it on the website for the town?
They typically do, They won't put it in the paper, per se, unless we really get desperate, but they do put it on the website, and it'll be on the bulletin board out in front of the building.
They put it with the trash bills. Everybody said, I mean, really? They put all kinds of other announcements on the trash bill.
The paper's always looking for something to write about. It could be an article for the, what is it, the pleasure?
Because that might do it.
We got some new people in my neighborhood. I'll see if anybody's interested.
New people?
You should have saved the training till the new alternates were appointed.
Okay.
I guess it's just a training. Up to you, Alan.
Alan Starkin will be doing our presentation for our training. And did everybody kind of share the name? Do you want to just go around the room real quick and just say who you are, or anybody here? If we met Bryant?
I've been on the board for almost 10 years.
I've been on board 18 months, maybe.
I think I've been on the board 5 years, 6 years.
I've been an observer for a year.
Yeah, you never take part in that.
Actually, I did take it for a while. I took part in this case.
The first go-round.
Well, then you're seasoned.
No.
At this point.
Well, yeah, I guess, considering all that. Yeah, that was he took it all the way, didn't he? I have a question as a citizen, not as a board member, but it pertains to this. So the judge ruled on this. So how long does he have to comply?
Oh, he doesn't. He has to comply immediately. When they appeal, he appealed the decision of the board. What the court does is look at our procedure to make sure that we follow proper procedure, and then they can kick it back to the board for a new hearing if they find that we're at fault. And in this case, he didn't. He has to comply, like, right away.
The day that the hearing, that the court's decision is made, because his appeal to the Superior Court, and we'll actually go over this, stays any enforcement against him. So the town can't enforce his, the infraction, the violation against him while there's an appeal pending.
Right.
But there's not an appeal pending anymore. So he's immediately upon him losing, he's in violation.
Right.
So as of this update,
you could start issuing his citations, whatever it is, $50 a day, $350 a day, whatever the ordinance provides for.
So November 6, 2013, from that point on, he's been in violation.
So he can't get his conditional use permit.
But he can't get
our occupancy permit.
Yeah.
He can't get that. And he said, yeah, we could fine him literally.
Every day. Unless your ordinance is written differently than most ordinances, the infraction is a daily infraction. So every day your violation is another infraction. So you could get him up $50 a day, $350, $500, whatever it is. I think you're up to $500 is what the General Assembly will authorize. It doesn't mean your ordinance allows for it.
Right.
You can look it up.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, the building inspector or Josie could go out there, or anybody could go out there every day and snap a picture and write him an infraction and send him a letter. And every day you take a picture, and every day it's a continuing infraction. And every week you write him a new letter with a new invoice. And I mean, okay, eventually you could take that. The town could take the house from him on tax lien if he doesn't pay. You said this is a chimney?
Yes, it was a
cantilever
chimney.
No, there's nothing.
But 6 inches into the set.
Yes.
Oh, very easily.
Oh, okay. So he's not tearing the structure down.
No.
This really is a fireplace at the beach.
It's a pride issue.
Yeah, it's a pride issue.
Well, let's get started. Yeah. But that is a good sort of introduction. That's the kinds of things that the Board of Adjustment deals with. So first I'm going to start with a little legal context. So, just so you guys understand, and you know, especially a lot of times I get these presentations in beach communities where everybody's not North Carolinians, native North Carolinians, and they often come from other places, and there are different rules in different states. So local governments are creatures of the state, and they have no inherent powers. Home rule states, which are typically found more in northern places, the local governments have very broad authority. Those legislatures have delegated basically any powers that don't conform to the state or federal constitution to those jurisdictions. And why that's important is because for those people who come from home rule states, they're used to a local government that has much more power and can kind of do whatever it wants. And that's not the case here. And so oftentimes you have issues, and I was just in Oak Island explaining this to them, where they had similar issues they're trying to deal with their large vacation rental issue that they're dealing with. And a lot of the people who come from other places just can't seem to understand why the council isn't just taking care of it. Let's just limit the size of the house and be done with it. Well, it's not that simple in North Carolina because we don't necessarily have those authorities. So Dillon rule states, which is sort of the flip side or the opposite of home rule states, where the local governments only have those powers that are expressly granted to them by the legislature. Now, North Carolina is not exactly a home rule state, so they have delegated significant authority, but it's sort of in the statutes it's sort of identified this way. Those powers that are expressly granted, so those are sort of the Dillon's rules sort of version. And then they've given us a little bit more flexibility. Those powers fairly implied or incident to those expressly granted. So that basically, you know, anything that you would have to have the power to do in order to do the things that are expressly granted. So, for instance, if you have the taxing authority, you know, that includes not that you necessarily need it, but the authority to mail a bill or to hire a tax assessor. They don't necessarily have to be granted the authority to hire a tax assessor if they have the authority to send, to assess taxes. And then finally, those powers that are essential to the declared objectives and purposes of local government. And that certainly is vague, and that's where things end up in court, a citizen might challenge whether the local government, in fact, had the powers to adopt the rule or ordinance or regulation that they adopted. So that's where we stand in North Carolina. There are four basic types of zoning decisions. The legislative decisions are the policy decisions that are generally done by the city council or county commissioners, and those are primarily adoption, amendment, or repeal of regulations. For you guys, it's mostly going to mean the zoning type stuff, zoning ordinances, zoning rezonings, map amendments, also things like annexations, budgets, et cetera, et cetera. So these are the final decisions. This sets the policy for the community. Advisory decisions typically is like a planning board or a staff level decision, and these are recommendations on plans, on texts and map amendments, things like that. They're not final, and they're very much less regulated. And then finally, the administrative decisions, and these are routine activities typically performed by staff, issuing permits, enforcement, those kinds of things we were just talking about. But sometimes, instead of staff, these things are delegated to planning board or the governing board, depending on the size of the community. In particular, some of the administrative activities that are often delegated to planning board, is like site plan approval, things like that, sometimes conditional use permit approval, which is actually quasi-judicial, and that's our next decision type. And that's what you're familiar with on the Board of Adjustment. So these are the formal actions where decision makers are applying discretion to existing policies on an individual basis. And it's quasi-judicial, as you know. It means court-like. And so the proceedings are very court-like. They're evidentiary hearings. They're gathering facts and evidence, very specific requirements. And these decisions can't be made by the governing board, the planning board, or by the Board of Adjustment. And the legislature has specifically authorized the governing board to have the authority to assign these quasi-judicial tasks basically as they see fit. So, for example, in Brunswick County, there are certain conditional use permits that the city council, the county commissioners handle. There's a subclass of conditional use permits that the planning board handles, and there's even a third class the Board of Adjustment handles. You can do it that way. The council could handle all of it. They could delegate it as they see fit. Just so that you guys are clear for this presentation, Board of Adjustment is what it's called in the statutes, and that's typically the terminology used, but some places they call it the Zoning Board of Adjustment or the Zoning Board of Appeals or even sometimes just the Zoning Board. I typically, and you'll see it in the presentation, I typically use ZBA as the adjustment for Board of Adjustment, and that's because often, like in Shiloh, they've got a Board of Aldermen, and that's also BOA, and so it can get confusing for some places. So the general statute is 160A388, and that is where the General Assembly has authorized the establishment of Boards of Adjustment. They require 5-person minimum and 3-year terms. Alternates may be appointed, and quasi-judicial proceedings are required. Other things are really left up to the local government. So, for instance, some places have us will have a 7-person board, and I guess you guys here though you still have the 5 and 3-year terms, and that's perfectly acceptable. You guys do have provisions for alternates in your ordinances, and of course, you know, flexibility and quasi-judicial procedures. So the statutes define 3 main categories of duties that the Board of Adjustment may hear and decide: special and conditional use permits, variances, and appeals. Now, according to Curry Beach Code of Ordinances, special and conditional use, by the way, are interchangeable terms, but in Curry Beach, special use permits is the term that they use, and the ordinance delegates that to the council, not the Board of Adjustment. Board of Adjustment could handle it. It's authorized to handle it by the state, but the local government has the authority not to delegate that. Variances, I looked over your code of ordinances very quickly. It looks like generally variances are delegated to the Board of Adjustment, but there are some variances, but there are other places where it's sort of more specific. And so, for instance, in 19-327, that one is for dimensional standards, and it specifically says the Zoning Board of Adjustment handles dimensional standard variances, and it doesn't really mention other variances, but it does say in 19-333.1 that height exceptions go to the Technical Review Committee. That would typically be considered a variance, but your ordinance specifically identifies the TRC as the decision-making body on that. And then as well, your ordinance in 19-336 talks about special use permit conditions or standards for parking combination, where you have combining parking to various uses. And they authorize that by condition of, by special use permit to the council. So that's a situation where the variances are kind of spread a little bit, because I would typically consider, put all those in the category of variance. And then finally, appeals to decisions of administrative officials. So that section 19-46 in the Curie Beach Town Code is very vague. It basically just says, or I'll even read it to you. It says, the powers and duties of the Board of Adjustment shall be those as specified by General Statute 160A388, which is this one here, as may be amended by the North Carolina General Assembly. Honestly, I think that would be an example of where you guys might want to recommend that somebody clarify that. Because the way I would read that is that the Board of Adjustment has all of these powers, and yet the Board of Adjustment has not been granted all of these powers. And so there's a little bit of a discrepancy between the way that phrase is written and the way that you guys are operating. Now, those other provisions elsewhere in the ordinance are more specific, and they're assigning these duties to other boards. But that's something that I would just sort of keep in mind, that the power, it is not typical for an ordinance to be so broad and just basically quoting the board, the general statutes, and not laying out the specific duties of the Board of Adjustment, particularly because the statutes say that the Board of Adjustment may, does not say shall. And so by just quoting that, the ordinance is not being very clear as to whether or not the Board of Adjustment has certain authorities or not. Probably not something that that the attorney for this variance appeal picked up on, but that would certainly be something that, if I were an attorney, and I'm not an attorney, by the way, this is not legal, none of this is legal advice. But if I were an attorney, I might pick up on that and say, boy, this isn't even clear as to whether they have clear authority to do these types of things. And so my personal suggestion is to take a look at that, maybe make a recommendation to planning.
That's 19-46?
Yeah. That's basically how the Board of Adjustment's available duties are broken down in Curie Beach to the various boards and committees. So I'm going to blow through this pretty quickly because you guys don't do conditional and special use permits. But this is one of the authorities that boards of adjustment can be responsible for. So for these things, the decision must be based on the standards in the ordinance. The burden of proof is on the applicant to show that the standards have been satisfied. And then if sufficient evidence is presented to show that the standards have been met, then the board must approve the permit. Now, that being said, the board has the discretion to determine whether or not those standards have been met. But if all the standards have been met and the board doesn't dispute that and they want to turn down the permit for some other reason, they don't have that authority. It's not that we don't like the project. The standards are laid out in the ordinance, and if the standards are met, the board has to approve the permit. On the flip side, if there is contradictory evidence presented, so the first half of that sentence, you know, as long as they presented the evidence, you know, then the board basically has to approve the permit. But if there's contradictory evidence presented, in the case that you guys heard about a year ago, I suspect the building inspector presented evidence. This is the case. I went to the site. Here are the pictures. This is what the ordinance allows. This is what they constructed. Contradicting whatever evidence that the petitioner submitted. And in that case, when there's contradictory evidence, the board has to decide, have the standards been met or not? And if they find that the standards have not been met, they have to deny the permit. If they find that the standards have been met, then they have to approve the permit. There's not, the discretion is whether or not the standards have been met, not then whether or not to approve the permit. And I think that's something that you should try to keep clear in your mind when you guys are reading. That would be true in the case with the variance as well as the conditional use permit. So the variance gives a board the permission to modify any provision of the ordinance to prevent unnecessary hardships. And I underline any there, and that's something that I think also is important to highlight about your ordinance. The section I was talking about, 19-327, where it talks about that the Board of Adjustment has the authority to vary or grant a variance for dimensional standards. That's really the only specific mention of what kind of situation a variance could be granted. But as you can see, the statutes actually say that any provision of the ordinance can be modified So section 46, 19-46, maybe covers that, maybe doesn't, but that's another situation where your ordinance is a little bit unclear and may, depending on who's interpreting it, may be inconsistent with state law. And any provision of the ordinance can be varied to prevent the unnecessary hardship where these four situations occur. The unnecessary hardship would result from strict interpretation of the ordinance. It used to be that there was a requirement to prove no reasonable use of the property, which was a very, very, very hard standard to meet. And basically, any variance that came before a board of adjustment was going to be denied. Because unless you got a really, really, really funny shaped lot, and the setbacks just basically eat into the lot in such a way that you can't build anything, it's very difficult to prove no reasonable use. It may not be the use you want. You may not be able to maximize your investment on that lot, but that's not what it was talking about. It was talking about no reasonable use. That specifically has been struck from the statutes, and so now it's just an unnecessary hardship. And so that gives a little bit more flexibility to the Board of Adjustment as to how to interpret that standard. The second is that the hardship cannot be the result of site has to be the result of site characteristics, such as the location, size, or topography of the site. It cannot be personal circumstances or common hardships. So if somebody's requesting a front yard setback variance because it's kind of hard to build the house they want to build with meeting that front yard setback, but everybody in that area has to meet that front yard setback, and everybody basically has the same constraints, then that's a common hardship. And that's not one that should be addressed by a variance. That should be addressed by an ordinance amendment or something of that nature. And personal circumstances. If I want to build a house that's X number of square feet, or I want to add an elevator, or I need a chimney, that's not a site characteristic standard or condition. It has nothing to do with the site. You could just make the building a little bit smaller and you could have your chimney. You know, that would solve your problem. So that's a personal circumstance example. And if it doesn't meet that standard, you've got to deny the variance. The hardship can't be the result of the applicant's actions. Again, if you build your chimney into the variance, into the setback, that is a result of your actions. And it's not a situation in which you could grant a variance. Now, and by the way, I talk about the new legislation. So in about last summer or so, the legislature adopted new Board of Adjustment standards that took effect in October. And so this is the language from that statute. And so it used to be that it was either unclear, and that oftentimes Boards of Adjustment would deny variances when they would consider buying the property, an action of the applicant. If you hadn't bought the property, you wouldn't be in the situation where you had to request a variance. The legislature has removed that from the definition of the applicant's actions. And the reason is because they're basically treating it like a property right. And the guy who owned the property before the appellant bought it, he had the same constraints, and he would not have been able to do the same thing. And so when you sell your property, those sort of constraints transfer. And that's sort of the way that they're thinking about it. And in fact, they've even specifically said that, you can buy a property knowing that there's a deficiency, and that maybe you're an attorney, or maybe you know a lot about land use law or something like that, and you think you got a shot at getting a variance. That is not sort of the applicant's actions being an example of it being a result of the applicant's actions. And then finally, the variance has to be consistent with the spirit, purpose, and intent of the ordinance. Public safety must be secured and justice must be achieved. And so that's obviously a very broad standard that the Board of Adjustment can apply a good bit of discretion to interpret.
Yes. Would you explain for me, and this is something I've kicked around in my head for years, public safety is security. What does it mean by public safety?
So, for instance, if the intent of a side yard setback is to separate buildings for fire protection purposes, then, maybe a side yard setback variance
that's, you know, in a minor degree, may be appropriate. But at some point, public safety is threatened by placing buildings too close together. And so that might be an example of not only the intent of the ordinance, but also where safety is an issue. I mean, public safety is a difficult one. I'll try to think of another example. I mean, fire protection or building code items are going to be the best bet there. But they don't have to abide by those for single family residential. So, you know, if it's a single family residence and it's not subject to the fire code, for example, then there may be some variance they're requesting that would put the public in danger or the residents in danger, some amount of the public in danger, and that would be grounds for denial of the permit. Now, there would have to be evidence presented to support that fact. But if there were valid evidence presented that the public safety is endangered by allowing this activity, then, and there's no conflict, either there's no conflicting evidence presented, or the evidence presented that there is a public safety issue is more compelling to the board than the argument that it's not a safety issue, then again, you would be compelled to deny the variance because that standard has not been met.
I have a question. Yep. You said something there that made me think. You said that they would have to prove that it wasn't, that it was a safety. We use the fire, for example. So the guy's asking for a variance because he wants to stick with the fireplace theme here. Put his fireplace theme into the setback. And then it's up to John, our building inspector, to say, no, he can't do that because that impedes the fireman from getting his ladder back there. You're putting the burden of proof on John, or would the burden of proof be on the individual?
Well, we'll get to a little bit of this, but it's on both.
I mean,
so the Board of Adjustment case is a case between two sides.
Right.
Generally, the town or the building inspector or the enforcement officer or the person representing the town and the person appealing that person's decision. Now, that's not always the case. In Oak Island, the permit was issued for the huge home. Mm-hmm. It was the neighbor that was appealing
the permit,
and the town was still defending the permit, but it wasn't the guy who built the house who was appealing. It was the neighbor. But generally, the town is the other party, and so the town's position is represented by usually the building inspector, a planner, if there's a planning department, and things of that nature. So. But that doesn't mean that the fire department shouldn't be one if it's or the fire marshal. Now, I don't know if is John the fire inspector as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
So he could, if it's a fire code issue, then he would be the one to present that evidence. If it's a fire service, you know, fire department, providing fire protection, if it's a fire protection, not a fire code, if it's a fire protection issue, then the fire chief is probably the appropriate person to say that we can't get a hose through here, or the ladder truck can't reach that high, or, you know, whatever the various.
I guess my question is, you've got a guy coming in asking to change our rules that our council over the years has set in place. So it doesn't. I just don't see why it would be the burden of the fire marshal, the building inspector, or anybody with the town to prove this. It should be totally on the other person to prove why he should be allowed to do this.
You're right, but the deal generally is that both sides will present their evidence.
Right.
The burden of proof is on him because he has to prove that all four of these standards are met. But the way that it sort of unfolds in practice is that if the town doesn't provide any evidence to the contrary, it's very difficult for the Board of Adjustment to just decide on their own that the evidence doesn't support granting the variance. Mm-hmm. If any single piece of evidence is enough to turn down, to overturn any one of these standards. That's all you need. That being said, they should, you know, they should throw the book at them and make sure they don't achieve, you know, that they can't, that you can't approve any of these standards, that you can't satisfy any of the standards. In that case, it's a, you know, it's an open and closed case. But if any one of those standards isn't met, then then automatically it needs to be denied. And so, for instance, in your fireplace example, it is clearly the result of their actions.
Right.
On the plans, they weren't in the setback.
Yeah, they were.
Were they?
Yeah, they
were. Were.
No, the cantilever fireplace, I don't think. There was something.
On the design.
On the plot plan, the cantilever fireplace was not on the plot plan, and that is what
exactly.
That is what is given to John to decide whether it meets the 40%, the 60%.
Exactly.
Impervious surface, the setback, so forth and so on.
So either they got a permit for a faulty, you know, faulty designs, or they, you know, they purposely left that off the permit, which would be their actions, or maybe they changed their plans after they got a permit, or, you know, it could be that it was right on the plans and the contractor just built it 6 inches in the wrong place. Doesn't matter, it's still all the result of the applicant's actions.
Well, he basically had it on the plans, but he built it out of 2x6s and extra insulation and everything else, so that drove it a few more inches, so it ended up being 24 inches instead of 18.
There you go. So that's a result of his actions. And it's also not peculiar to his site. You know?
True.
Everybody, I bet he had a normal shaped lot, and everybody on every side of him had a normal shaped lot, and there were no topographic issues that made him, where everybody else gets to center their house on their lot, and he had to be over here because of the wetland or the whatever, so, yeah, the stream. So if that's not the case, then there's nothing specific to this site that sets him apart. And so again, he can't meet that standard.
But the only thing different about this case was the owner was a general contractor. He held a valid North Carolina license, mm-hmm, and it does not allow him to escape his actions. But he was trying to push his actions back on the building inspector, saying, well, he didn't tell me, but as Brian and I both have license, and I have general contracting and mechanical, but just because the inspector didn't say that, it does not allow you to escape those actions that you created, even though it is your own home.
And you have to be consistent with your plan. The plot plan doesn't show you violating that setback.
Right.
You can't violate that setback.
That was the difference in this case of, you know, the responsibility that we have as contractors. You can't run from that.
Right.
No matter what the building inspector says, you still can't run from it. Because it's your responsibility, and that falls into the safety, public safety piece of it.
Absolutely.
Which is our responsibility when you hold those licenses.
Absolutely.
But my understanding is there was two separate plans that were submitted.
No.
One was the design plan that the permit was granted on, and the plot plan was submitted way after it was construction started.
No, what you're talking about is the as-built survey.
Uh-huh.
The as-built survey. See, one of the rules that a lot of contractors haven't read the rules for both towns on the beach. I mean, is on your plot, all your cantilevers, all your overhangs, all your stairs, all that counts as your covered surface of the land.
Oh, right.
And nobody knows that your a lot of people don't understand that your cantilever also is included in your lot coverage calculations. So when the old surveyor came up here and said, I never put cantilevers on my plot plans, well, he hasn't read the rules of both beach towns. And both of them say that, and that would count as your, as part of your impervious surface calculation. So, I mean, that's where that was, but that's off subject, so.
Right, and it, because especially because he can't meet those middle two, there's no way he can meet those middle two standards. Mm-hmm. And so it almost doesn't matter, even if everybody felt like it was a shame and, you know, this poor guy, you know, or if the property owner was one person and the contractor was a different person, and, you know, the poor property owner is stuck with the contractor's responsibility. Don't make him tear his brand new house down. We should grant him a variance. You can't. You've got to deny the variance because it doesn't meet the standards. The third, and for you guys, the second and final, the type of decision that you can hear is an appeal. And actually, interpretations, I think, were taken out in the
new statutes, and I need to fix that. So appeals, first of all, advisory opinions are not allowed. You have to appeal an actual official action or determination by staff. You can't say, let's go to the Board of Adjustment and appeal a decision that hasn't been made to sort of get, just to feel it out, to find out if we're going to be allowed to break X rule or Y rule. There's got to be an official action. A building permit has to be issued, or a violation has to be issued before you can have an appeal. The standard is not what the ordinance should say, but what the governing board intended. And you should assume that the governing board knew what it was doing. So the intent should be gleaned from what the ordinance actually says. You should not be substituting your judgment for that of the governing board. You're not setting policy. As I said on the four legislative, four types of zoning decisions, the legislative decision, the policy decision is reserved for the elected officials. They get elected by the public to make those kinds of decisions. The Board of Adjustment does not have the authority to say, we don't like that rule. That rule's vague, that rule's unclear, if it's vague or unclear and it really doesn't, you know, and you need to make an interpretation, that's one thing. But if it's vague, you know, to where, you know, it could maybe mean what the contractor or the applicant wants it to mean, but it almost certainly means something else. You know, then even if you don't like what it says and you feel like there's enough wiggle room to go the other way, I mean, you're supposed to apply the ordinance the way that it's written.
Well, the only thing in this case would sway me to have some doubt would be to... Nobody ever doubted that the 24 was truly the measurement, and we could go 18. So there was
right.
6 inches there. If there was some doubt, you know, put before us that maybe it was 18 and not 24, then it may have changed how we looked at it, but there was no evidence.
Absolutely.
There was no evidence at all presented that it wasn't 24. The people agreed that it was 24.
What this is saying though is that you don't have the authority to say, but 18 is too strict. It should be 24.
Right.
You can't substitute your judgment.
Exactly.
For the judgment of the elected officials.
I mean, it was very clear. It was that, but you know, if there was some evidence saying that it was 18 instead of 24, with pictures and measurements and everything, that
they're not in violation. Absolutely.
Right, but there was nothing presented at all.
Right.
The ordinance was very clear. It was 18 inches.
Right. Exactly. It's not always quite so clear, but the point of the intent. And the idea of substituting judgment is that this is not for you to say this is an unfair rule. If it's an unfair rule, you deny the appeal and you petition to the planning board to change the rule. But you don't change the rule because that's a legislative action and the state has specifically reserved those types of decisions for elected officials. Next, the appeal must be brought by a party with standing. And that means you have to hold a property interest that's specifically affected by the decisions, and you have to bring the appeal within 30 days' notice of the decision. Maybe it was an appeal also for the fireplace. If the guy builds the fireplace and he gets issued a violation, and 35 days later he tries to appeal that decision, sorry, buddy.
Well, what happened? The case was they came before us for an appeal of the building inspector's occupancy permit.
Right.
And we denied it. Mm-hmm. Well, they threatened to appeal it. That's fine. You know, appeal all you want. Several months later, we get the same case up. It's now a variance. So there
they came twice.
So we denied it again based on the same facts.
Right. And, you know, and
that's interesting. I've never heard of the same case presented as both an appeal and as a variance.
It should never have happened.
Yeah, it should probably never have happened. But,
it had his, you know, quite a bit of media attention.
The
newspaper's not real good about getting these things right. No, we'll spend this. This stuff's complicated. You know, I don't expect the Star News to sit through a 2-hour presentation.
Well, they picked out only the parts that they thought were cool.
Right.
Good.
Of course. Of course.
I mean, yes, we had a case many, many years ago before I think any of you guys were on the board, where a contractor built a house. It was on Alabama Avenue. I don't know if you guys remember. Mm-hmm. Built this house, and the surveyor came in and said, okay, here are the setbacks from the roadway. Well, he didn't realize that the setback on Alabama Avenue was wider.
The right-of-way.
Yeah, the right-of-way was wider than on most streets. And so they finished building the entire house and wasn't caught until they went for the occupancy permit, and our building inspector went, whoop, too close to the roadway. Well, they appealed.
That's why you have foundation.
They appealed. And so would that have been a hardship not created by the applicant?
No, it was created by the applicant and the applicant's employees or contractors. I mean, the surveyor is responsible for that mistake, and hopefully he's got good insurance. Because, I mean, it's not the applicant per se, but I mean, I'm pretty sure that would be classified as